Good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. My guest this week speaking to us by phone from his office is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Burton. Mr. Mayor, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Much obliged. If you've got a question for Mayor Burton during our next half hour, please do give us a call at 496-1999. You may also send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet your question to us at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, I wanted to start with something we just heard about in the newscast and something that was an interesting topic of discussion yesterday at the State House, that business personal property tax exemption. There are some mayors, you just heard Terre Haute Mayor Duke Bennett in that story, who say that this, combined with the property tax caps we've had on the books for a couple of years now, could slash city budgets. Duke Bennett says his budget could be 50% lower than what it was before the property tax caps. How is Crawfordsville treating that issue?
Well, we know that it potentially could be crippling for us as well, and we've watched it very closely. We're taking a little bit of a wait-and-see attitude to see how things really look in the end here, but we have no intent to come back and slash that here locally, because we just simply cannot do it. That's exactly right. On top of the tax caps that are in place, it would leave us with substantially less revenue. You know, and really at the end of the day, we understand economic development. We understand creating a business-friendly climate. But at the end of the day, you have to have a community in which people want to live, and in which businesses want to locate and their employees want to live. So it's a tough situation for us.
Have you run the numbers at all to see what this would mean for you? I mean, is your situation similar to what Duke Bennett is saying exists in Terre Haute?
It would be very similar. Obviously, we're smaller than Terre Haute, but if you look at it percentage-wise, it's a very similar type situation.
What are you hearing from both current business owners and anyone who's thinking about locating in the city? Is this an issue that's on their radar at all?
We are never hearing this as an issue. When we're looking through, talking to existing businesses and employers, when we're talking to potential investors, this just never really enters the equation. And I guess my approach is a little different. We can all talk about tax abatement. We can talk about the tax structure. We can talk about all these things. But really, when it comes down to it in the end, you have to have a community in which you have a decent quality of life, in which they want to bring their businesses. And I think we see that play out in Indiana. We see, substantial growth in areas that maybe aren't as tax-friendly as those areas have much lower taxes. And I think that comes down to the fact that it's quality of life, and people want to be located in an area in which they have certain things and a certain standard of living. So it's a balancing act. It truly is.
You mentioned, of course, that Crawfordsville is much smaller both in size and in population than a city like Terre Haute. I wonder if you think that these tax issues, be they the business personal property tax or the tax caps themselves, have different effects based on the size of a community and thus the relative tax revenue that comes in from all of the different taxing pieces?
Well, I'm not sure that it's related to the size of the community. I think it's probably more related to, the diversity of the community. How much are you getting off of business tax and how much are you getting off of residential tax? And certainly that would affect probably a community like Terre Haute and Crawfordsville more so than it would maybe a community such as, somewhere in the Donut area around Indianapolis, a Carmel, a Zionsville, something like that.
While we're on the subject of this, I had to wonder if this issue or the issue of tax abatements at all like this came up when you were talking with the folks at Penguin Random House when they pitched you the idea of expanding their distribution center there.
Certainly, tax abatement was a major part of their consideration. And we faced a situation with the Random House proposal that was kind of unique for us, because it simply wasn't considering what we could do to make an expansion possible. They were looking at consolidating their centers. So we knew we were either going to double in size or lose everything. And that certainly puts it in a different perspective. So we were very aggressive with the tax abatement on that particular project. We did a front loading, and the legislature has given us some flexibility to change how we do those abatement structures now. It's not the same across the board. We can load it heavily in the beginning and then taper off, or start out slowly and then ratchet it up. So we took a different approach with that kind of fit their needs and put a lot of different things together, and were able to make that successful and possible.
I'm glad you brought that up, because this was an interesting part of the conversation you and I had by phone a few weeks ago when this announcement was made. And you told me even at that time that you thought that this announcement, the Penguin Random House announcement, will either be a giant windfall for Crawfordsville or you might lose that business entirely, kind of all or nothing.
Absolutely.
How does a situation with a big business like that one come to kind of hang in the balance like that, whether it's you're all in or you're all out?
Well, and this was a rare case, and simply because they, you know, from my understanding, had been acquired by bigger companies and merged with other companies. So, you know, you have this company that ends up with too many distribution systems, too many distribution centers in their system. And so they have to look and, you know, decide how they can be more efficient. So if they go from four distribution centers to two, somebody's going to lose out on that. And when you go from four to two, obviously the two that are left are going to have to get a little bit bigger. So that's how we kind of ended up in that situation, and that was unique. We're not usually in that kind of a situation, but it certainly told us we had to bring our A game and make sure we were really ready to land this. We didn't want any mistakes.
I got to thinking about it a little bit after the fact, and I wondered if you felt something like an economic hostage, for lack of a better term, because of course you don't want to lose out on the hundreds of jobs that are already at that facility, and of course the money that they generate even now.
Right.
Into those people's pockets, and then those people pay back into the local economy, and then you have the ability, of course, to potentially double what's already there. I mean, did you feel sort of trapped by the financial aspect of this whole thing at all?
Well, I don't think that I ever felt, you know, hostage or trapped or anything like that. I mean, you know, we were certainly free to make the decisions we wanted to make, but you have to consider the big picture, and I don't think a lot of times people consider that, and you have to look at the jobs they're bringing to the community. In this case, we nudged them a little bit to get their pay rate up and to do some things like that. So there was some give and take back and forth, and it certainly wasn't a case in which they held us hostage.
Tell me about that. What kind of terms did you secure for the people who are going to be working there?
Well, basically, we have a tax abatement policy in place in which we don't just randomly, arbitrarily decide on tax abatement. We have a formula that we follow that's based on the number of jobs you're creating, the number, you know, how they're paid, what the average pay is, and also what the investment will be here over time that we know we at some point will start to collect taxes on. So we applied that formula, and in order for them to get the abatement that they needed to bump those rates up a little bit. So they were able to do that, and they were actually already in the process of doing that because the labor market here, believe it or not, is very tight. And so local employers have had to increase that somewhat to get the employees that they need.
What kind of a bump are you talking about? Can you give me a sense in terms of percentage or in terms of dollars per hour that they moved up?
Right. Moving up basically about $2 an hour in those starting rates.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. We'd love to have your phone calls with questions for the mayor. The phone number to call in and ask those is 496-1999. You may also send an email to ask@WBAA.org. You can tweet your questions as well to @WBAAnews on Twitter. While we're on the subject broadly of the city's budget, you held the first of two budget workshops on Monday, did you not?
We did.
And tell me about that. How is it going? You mentioned that your workforce is fairly tight. How's the economic situation generally as you look at it today?
We're sitting in a very good situation right now. You know, the city of Crawfordsville has long been very conservative in their approach to spending. They've always stayed well below where they should be. Didn't see a lot of artificial growth, you know, when times were really good, and so we've been able to sustain that. We actually sit on a pretty healthy 12 to 18 month reserve at all times, and that's pretty envious position to be in for most Class 3 cities in Indiana. So our goal is to just maintain that, and not necessarily grow that. I don't believe in taxing at one rate and providing services at a much lower rate, but we're just trying to maintain where we are, and we've had to make changes. The tax caps create a tough situation for us, but it's forced us to become much more efficient and a lot more to really think about things, and we do that. And we've combined a lot of things, and we've eliminated some things. And then there's been areas we've had to kind of pick it up a little. So our budget looks very good. I really think our general fund budget will come in certainly less than a 1% increase over this year's. We've been a less than a 1% every year I've been in office over the previous year, and this year might even come in less than a half of a percent. So that's, I think, pretty remarkable when you consider, if you look around, everything is going up. The cost of everything is going up. So that just tells me we are being more and more efficient.
When you say you've got a 12 to 18 month reserve or rainy day fund, whatever you want to call it, does that mean that, you know, if I think some people might hear that and think, and I'm curious if this is the right interpretation, that if your revenue suddenly went completely dry, you could survive for a year?
We could. Yes, we could.
So that effectively means that you've got something like a 100 to 150% of your general fund budget reserve sitting in the bank.
That is correct.
Now, most cities, I think, want to have anywhere between, I've heard it said, 10% to 33% is fairly common. And now, granted,
that's fairly common.
This is I think, a lot of times with larger cities. I covered Bloomington for a long time and had lots of conversations with Mayor Mark Cruzan down there about their trying to build up their rainy day fund. And he said 33% was a great goal, and he hoped they get there at some time. If you're sitting on 100% or 150%, let me make the same argument to you that some people are making to state lawmakers when they say, hey, the state has a $2 billion surplus.
Absolutely.
Potentially. Shouldn't you be plowing some of that back into city services?
We should be, and I've made that point. And it took me a little while after coming into office to kind of try to sort out what was going on. And I had been involved in city government for 26 years before I became mayor, and had worked as a department head and been involved in the budget process. And I was a little perplexed because I knew every year we would go through this process and we would cut public safety, we would cut things, and we barely would make it below the state maximum levy. And then you would turn right around and find out that our reserves were getting larger and larger every year. And that was perplexing to me, and it took a while to dig in and figure that out. And basically, the conclusion was that for many years, the city had been over-budgeting in their capital budgets. And you know, knowing good and well that they were not going to spend that. So to the state, it looked like you were going to spend exactly what you were taking in or more than what you were taking in some cases. But in reality, actual spending was much lower. So, I mean, and when I talk about over-budgeting, I'm talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars here and hundreds of thousands of dollars there. So they built this large nest egg. We think it's comfortable where it's at. We want to be very careful. But I've made a strong point that we cannot continue taxing people at a higher rate and providing these services at a much lower rate. And consistently what you would hear out of city officials is we cannot afford to do this and we cannot afford to do that. But to me, that was more like a shell game. And you're right. I think that's exactly what we have going on with the state of Indiana, and I think we should be critical of that. So I've made a big push to invest more in infrastructure, to invest more in our capital items, to really focus on cleaning the community up. And so we've been spending more on those kinds of things, and that is affecting that reserve. At the end of the day, I have to convince a council that that's a wise decision, and they, you know, are very conservative people in central Indiana here, so sometimes they don't necessarily agree with that. But they've bought in for the most part that we need to. We're certainly not going to build that reserve more than what it is.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is that the problem you're facing, is that the city council wants to be more conservative with that reserve than you want to be?
That's a challenge. It's certainly a challenge. And I don't know that it's a tough dynamic because you can slice those numbers, you know, any way you want to slice them, really. So, but for me, that's really where we sit, and the numbers are the numbers. But there certainly will sometimes be council people who will say, we're spending more than we're taking in, and they really get hung up on that. Well, we are, because we're spending down a little bit of that reserve and using some of that money that's already been collected from people to do things. And my point is, we need to go out and clean this stuff up and do these things. So on the face of it, it looks like, yes, we're in a deficit. We're spending more than we're taking in. And so the alarm bells will sound that we can only continue this for X number of years and we're broke, kind of thing. My point to the council has been, we're going to do this for a few years to get this thing taken care of and to really right the ship and fix some of these long-standing problems we've had in our community. And we've had problems that have existed for decades that have not been addressed.
Like what? What are you trying to address? What would you like to spend more money
on
than the council?
For example, the old hospital building in our community, an abandoned former hospital that sat for three decades falling in our community. And we finally have something in place through tax credits to turn that around. It will become housing, senior housing. We're very excited about that. But we will have to do some infrastructure in that neighborhood to do that. So that's I think that's a good example. We had an abandoned factory on the south edge of town that had sat for decades falling in. The owner actually took it down but hasn't cleaned it up. We're getting ready to spend some city money to go in and clean that up. We've acquired the property, and then we're going to turn it around and redevelop it and get it back in private hands and get it back on the tax rolls. So those are just some examples.
Let me talk numbers here for a second. I was trying to figure out what the city's budget would be, and the best I can make out, and please do tell me if I'm way off, is the city's general fund budget and all the other accoutrement is somewhere on the order of, what, $12 to $15 million? Is
yes,
that close?
Yes, that is very close.
So then that means that you potentially have that amount of money or more sitting in
yes.
the bank waiting for you.
Yes.
Do you have a sense of what that actual total is? Like, if you were to go to the bank right now and get a deposit slip and it says the city of Crawfordsville has this many millions, what would that number be?
That's kind of hard to track down because it's not like it just sits in one account. So it's in different things, scattered about. But yeah, I mean, it's easy to say that there's $12 million sitting there. Yeah, and again, we need to have that operating reserve, and we certainly do. But we need to get out there and provide services, and we need to make things happen, and we have the ability to do that. But you have to keep in mind that it's not like I can just go draw money out of the bank and go spend it. I need to go through the council and get their approval, and, you know, they become very concerned that we are spending more than we're taking in. So that becomes a little bit of a challenge to deal with at times.
Well, so you were talking about having a 1% or maybe a 0.5% increase in the city budget this year over last.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to take a look, and let's just assume you have $12 million and your budget is $12 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to, say, try to allocate an extra $1 million, that's
mm-hmm.
approximately 8.5% increase in spending if you look at it that way. So
right.
you're nowhere near that. And let's
right.
say, of course, that if you were to do that, you could still do it for 12 years without having to increase revenue
Absolutely.
At all before you draw down your reserves.
Right.
So
right.
if you could do that with an 8.5% increase, which isn't that much,
mm-hmm.
why are people sticking to, and by people I mean the council, I guess, why are they sticking to a 0.5% or a 1% increase? Why is that? That's still a pretty wide gulf there.
It is. I think you just have to remember they're this is a very conservative area. People bring that to the table. And I think, and this is just my political view here, there has been a real push, across the state, really, that we need to be so conservative, we need to hold back, we need to really watch what we're doing. And it's like one of those things that, you know, if a little bit is good, then a lot must be a lot better. And I think that's what we see happening at the state level. So this has really become an issue. And a lot of people are very active politically and really want to question every dollar that's spent. And that's fine, but it creates an environment where I think elected officials feel that they just need to be the watchdog, and we need to cut in every way possible, because you have people telling you, I pay too much in taxes, and I don't want to pay any more in taxes, and you need to stop taking my money for taxes and doing these things. Now, that is a vocal minority, I think, but they're very vocal, and they get people's attention. And so when elected officials go out and question these things, they get a positive response from that vocal minority, and I think that fuels a lot of it.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We have just a few minutes left with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton this afternoon. If you've got a question, call us at 765-496-1999. Tweet your questions to @WBAAnews on Twitter, and we can get them that way as well. Let's try and make this a little more positive. Are there priorities of yours that are going to get funded in this year's budget
oh,
that
absolutely.
May not have had before?
Absolutely. And I'm not trying to say that the council has not been very positive. They've been very positive. It's just a conservative approach. And we've been able to really do some good things. And like I said, we've become more efficient. So, you know, we are really trying to get our hands around this health care issue for our employees and the cost, ever-rising cost of health care that we've had to deal with. So things like that have been addressed. But for me, the big push is really about improving quality of life. When we came in, we really started to approach and look at our approach to economic development, and we've kind of really changed all of that, and so we're making some changes there. And now we're really going after quality of life. And like I've said over and over, you have to have a community in which people want to live. So we're going after some certain key things. I mentioned the old hospital. We're working on a deal to redevelop the former Ben Hur Life building in downtown Crawfordsville. We've received funding to improve our trail system. We've received some funding from the state to upgrade the one of the primary roads into our Commerce Park. Those are all things that we're looking at doing to make quality of life better. We added 3 police officers to our department this year. We found a way to fund additional firefighters that we have on a federal grant now. We'll be funding them locally starting next year. We found a way to do that. So we have a lot of good, positive things going on, and the community really seems to be moving in the right direction.
While we're on the issue of budget broadly, last week you participated in a community discussion about the future of rail service there in Crawfordsville, and obviously that's an issue that affects us here in Lafayette too.
Absolutely.
What is your sense about whether the community is willing to pay to keep that, and I guess more to the point, will the city council go along with whatever the feelings are?
Well, in all honesty, I don't think it's going to make it to the city council. You know, simply because we're stuck in a situation in which the state of Indiana has been largely deaf on this issue for many years. You know, we didn't end up in this situation overnight. The state kind of ignored it like it was going to go away, and I think had every intention of just letting it die until all of us along the route, and Lafayette included, stood up and said, no, we need to keep this, and it is important to our future. So we've been funding at 50%. The state's been funding at 50%. So, you know, I give them credit for that. But really here in the end, we need the state to step up and fund this at a higher level than what they're doing. We as local partners, I think, are all on the same page. We've been paying, and we've been paying quite a bit, and we'll try to pay that, but we can't pay more. We can't go back and ask our councils for more money. But the real wrinkle right now is that the city of Indianapolis has announced that they will no longer participate. And if they're not participating, I don't see any way possible that the rest of us, meaning Crawfordsville, Lafayette, West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, Rensselaer, can pick up that much slack. And so I'm not sure we're ever going to make it to really bring it back to our councils.
I spoke about this issue with Mayor Dennis and Mayor Roswarski here in town, and they seemed to indicate that there had been meetings among all of you who were stakeholders in this. And I wonder, you know, how did you approach it when whoever Indianapolis's representative was said, we're not going to keep kicking in the $25,000 a month that we've been doing?
Well, very carefully, I guess. You know, I think what we're seeing there is part of a much bigger picture politically, and I think there's some tension going on between the city of Indianapolis and the state of Indiana on different levels, and this is kind of falling victim to that. So they've never really had anyone directly at the meetings. They've always participated by phone, so it's been kind of hard to have a lot of interaction. I'm working on some direct interaction with the city of Indianapolis right now to really get a feel for this. If we can get them back to the table, I think we have a shot. And I have no doubt in my mind that if we can push this thing over the hump and get it funded and improve the service, and we certainly have a service problem, but improve the service, it will be very successful, and it will greatly benefit all of our communities and the entire state of Indiana. And it's a direction we need to go. We just have to get over the hump.
Of course, the state is going to enter, or the legislature especially, is going to enter a new budget session come January, and it's a time for you to ask more money of them. However, that gives you at least a couple-month lag time because October 1st, Amtrak is slated to kill this thing. I mean, is it your opinion that starting in October and for some prolonged period of time after that, service is going to come to a halt until the state kicks in more money and or Indianapolis kicks in more money? I mean,
yeah,
do you think it's dead for a couple months?
I think it will. I think it will die unless one of the two step up. And we really need the governor to step up. You know, we can talk about the state legislature all we want, but in reality, this could be dead and gone before they ever go back to work. So we need the governor to step up and pull something together for us to make this happen. And if you look at surrounding states, they've been very successful with this passenger rail piece, and I know maybe they've not been successful in other areas, but when you consider the amount of investment versus the return on this and what it means down the road, it's money well spent. And the state of Indiana, certainly with their $2 billion surplus, could step in and just get us over the hump. You know, we think it'd be self-sufficient once we get over a year or two, but we need some help there. And it's tough for us. I'm in the same situation as your mayors there. It's tough for us to go back and ask our councils for support when we have the city of Indianapolis, who benefits greatly from this, not participating. We have the city of Beech Grove not really participating, and they're not on the route, but they benefit with all the jobs. And unfortunately, we have the city of Dyer not participating and still have a stop. So that makes it tough for us to sell it at home.
So let me ask, someone cynical, maybe like me, I'm a cynical reporter, might say, well, Mayor Barton, you've got this gigantic millions of dollars in reserve. Couldn't you, for this 1 year, kick in $1 million just to see what happens?
Well, I have to sell that at home, and I have to sell that with my council, and so that's a tough bill. I think we've made some strides there because it was put out for an RFP, and they've chosen a private provider to operate the service. That helps, at least in my case, because there's certainly a perception out there that Amtrak's very inefficient. You know, the service isn't what it should be, and all kinds of issues like that. So I've said all along, we can't confuse the two issues. Most of the opposition I hear in my community is opposition to Amtrak itself, not to passenger rail. So this kind of cleans it up. Now we're talking about passenger rail, not necessarily Amtrak itself. So, you know, it is possible, and that's why I've stepped up, you know, and we've done funding to this point. We can't continue to keep increasing that without the state helping us out, and we certainly need Indianapolis.
Quickly, does having corridor capital in the mix help with that?
I think it does. It lends some private credibility that we didn't have before. You know, there's a private company there watching over things, and they're going to be as efficient as possible.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Mr. Mayor, thanks so much. We'll do it again next month.
Thank you.
Thanks, same to you. If you've got a question for next week's Mayor, John Dennis of West Lafayette, you can email us at ask@wbaa.org. You can tweet a question to @WBAAnews on Twitter, or do call in at the same time next week. This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a good afternoon.